This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. During tax season, your personal info travels to a lot of places. Between payroll, your tax consultant, and the IRS. If your W-2 gets exposed, that's just the ticket for identity thieves. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it guaranteed or your money back. Don't let identity thieves take you for a ride. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Brian Kilmeade coming to you from back in New York, 48th and 6th, 1-866-408-7669. Big show coming your way this hour. We're going to be joined by Senator John Cornyn in a matter of moments and Julian Edwards. I want to get to the bottom of the practicality of nuclear energy. We keep hearing about it. Let's find out details about it. Julian Edwards has that. First things first, before we get to Senator Cornyn, quick note, special congratulations to Trey Yinks. He gets the RTNDA Award because he's for his outstanding, brave, and courageous journalism. Good luck to that. Today, Secretary Hegseth hosts an honor cordon and a bilateral meeting with the Honorable John Healey, Secretary of State for Defense at the UK. So we'll have a chance to work things out with our allies. And we know Special Envoy Keith Kellogg delivers a keynote address over at the Council of Foreign Relations. So it's going to be a busy day. But let's get to the big three.
Number three.
To not stand for that little boy is aberrant and disgusting behavior. So they not only do they lose the high ground, but they shock the conscience of many Democrats.
They were totally disinterested. The kid had cancer. You can't cheer for that. Dems fall out, picking up steam as their actions Tuesday reveal a party without a core set of beliefs and any semblance of responsible leadership.
Number two.
You know how long we've been waiting? For a long time in this country to have the kind of leadership with that kind of clarity. He's tired of watching these videos every weekend where hostages that are emaciated are released and bodies are turned over, and sometimes it's the wrong bodies, and he's lost his patience with it.
That is Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, talking about the Trump doctrine, I think it is, peace and freedom, both on display with two major theaters of conflict, Ukraine and Gaza. With Ukraine, his efforts to stop the fighting is now close to putting all the pressure on Russia to show compromise. And with Gaza, a threat issue to face back by the IDF, will stand back and back up the president's word to let them go in and finish off Hamas once and for all. A little bit different than Joe Biden's policy.
Number one.
Mayor Johnson, is Denver a sanctuary city?
Folks use that term differently. I can tell you what Denver does.
Okay, I take that as a yes.
We don't ask about immigration status and delivering citizens.
You don't ask about how much money the city of Boston has spent on illegal immigration? Are you out of your mind?
Border more secure than ever, but Dems and blue cities are holding firm on their irresponsible sanctuary policies as alien criminals thrive. Now, you may think, well, that doesn't really apply to Texas and Tennessee and Florida. Well, no, there's places like Austin, Texas is a sanctuary city. Senator John Cornyn knows that. He's a senator from Texas and joins us now. Senator, welcome back.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be with you.
Do you think they made any – I don't know if you have your own chamber to worry about and your own set of policies. Are we making any progress in letting people know that being a sanctuary city is not good for the country?
Well, I think yesterday was a revelation. You know, you have four big city mayors defending their policy, which basically was to defy – federal law. And I expect to see Tom Homan and the Trump administration test that.
Take legal action?
Yeah, I do. I hope they do. I mean, I just think there's a role for civil disobedience, I guess, but you have to pay the consequences. And that means you may have to pay a penalty, a fine, or go to jail. And so we'll see what happens. But I think the Trump administration ought to move forward and see whether mayors can defy federal law.
So Chairman Jim Jordan had a chance to talk to the Mayor Johnson of Denver, at which time you see video of a TDA gang member from Venezuela in jail, let out, but they won't cooperate with ICE. So they have to wait for him to get out of the jail, and then they got to chase him. And you have to see this. It looks like they have a bunch of guys chasing this lethal gangster. And one was assaulted. It took about 10 people away from their other jobs to do it. So listen to Jim Jordan question Mayor Johnson about it. Cut five.
We've done, and we do this regularly. We've done 1,226 of these. Is we notify
I'm
us.
I'm asking about it, one. I'm not asking about the 1,200. I'm asking about Mr. Abraham Gonzalez, who's a gang member from Venezuela, stole a car, assaulted someone. 345 days you had him in custody. And I said, hey, can you give us 48 hours heads up?
I don't
you
know.
You gave him 1 hour notice.
1 hour. Do you believe that? And then he was being let out, Senator.
That's crazy. I mean, the problem is these local law enforcement agencies are supposed to honor federal detainers so that there can be an orderly transfer of these people from local jail to federal custody and then hopefully deported. This needs to end.
Senator, you're on the Intelligence Committee, you're on the Judiciary, Budget, and Foreign Relations Committee. Your reaction to that terrorist being brought back who masterminded the Abbey Gate bombing?
Well, congratulations to all of our intelligence agencies and for bringing this person to justice. He obviously had American blood on his hands, and that's critical. But it's another reminder that this is still a very dangerous world, and it's not just terrorism. It's this great power competition like we're seeing in Europe and in the Indo-Pacific, and we need to reestablish deterrence. Nobody wants to fight endless wars, but the best way to prevent them is to reestablish deterrence, and that's peace through strength.
So we understand emergency meetings in the European Union. They're going to come up with a plan to help Ukraine with $850 billion combined, I guess. But we are now halting intelligence sharing, and we've halted weapons deliveries. They're on a pause. Here's the CIA director, Cut 9.
What President Trump said is he asked for a pause. As I've mentioned, President Trump is the peace president. Never been a war under his leadership. He wants to end the wars that exist. And so in this case, as everyone saw play out, President Trump had a real question about whether President Zelensky was committed to the peace process. And he said, let's pause. I want to give you a chance to think about that. And you saw the response that President Zelensky put out a statement saying, I'm ready for peace. And I want Donald Trump's leadership to bring about that peace.
So your thoughts about where we're at now?
Well, I hope the pause is temporary, which means I hope that President Zelensky and President Trump were able to basically strike a deal. I think it's important that Europe step up, and that's happening thanks to President Trump. He's demanding that they spend more of their GDP on defense, 5%, not just the anemic 2%. And this is their backyard. So I appreciate the fact that he is telling Europe no more free rides on the back of the American taxpayer. But Putin is a killer. He's not going to stop. And so we need to continue to stay united with our allies to deter his aggression, because if there is a peace deal, I wouldn't trust Putin at all. And we need to establish, like I said earlier, deterrence and consequences for him to break it.
This is one thing that Trump does that so few appreciate. He also declared and made open that the Russians are supplying coordinates for ships going through so the Houthi rebels can target them, especially American ships. They don't target China and Russian ships. He also chronicled the fact that the Russians are consulting with the Iranians on weapons purchases. The Iranians. How does that affect the region? So they're up to unsavory acts, and we're not turning a blind eye to it.
Well, I think we need to be clear-eyed about the Russians and what their aspirations are. They are not our friends. Putin has essentially declared war on the West, I think a lot of folks in the West have yet to really realize the severity of what's going on. This coalition of autocracies from Iran to North Korea to China to Russia is very dangerous, and those of us who are students of American history and world history have seen parallels to this in the run-up to World War II. So we need to be very careful and very diligent and very clear-eyed about what we're up against.
So, right, I guess the next step, after we sign this mineral deal, it could be any day now, the next step would be see how serious the Russians are, right?
Yeah, so far Putin hasn't offered anything. All the pressure has been on President Zelensky, and appropriately so, to come to the table. But I'm interested to see what's what Putin will offer. Unless Putin pays a price, unless there is some way to provide a united front against further aggression into Ukraine and into Europe, Putin's going to keep on coming. He's got this aspiration for reestablishing the Russian Empire. This is not a guy who makes decisions based on cost benefit. He's willing to sacrifice hundreds of thousands of Russian lives in pursuit of his ideological goals.
So the president put this out yesterday to Hamas, and Adam Boehler met with a Hamas official. Release all the hostages now, he writes. Not later. Immediately return all the dead bodies of people you murdered, or it's over for you. Only sick and twisted people keep bodies, and you are sick and twisted. I'm sending Israel everything it needs to finish the job. Not a single Hamas member will be safe if you don't do as I say. Will this work?
I love it. President Trump is showing strength, which is the only thing that murderers like Hamas recognize. And I think we should do everything we can to continue to support Israel to end this threat. And it's not just Hamas. It's the man behind the curtain, which is the supreme leader in Iran. And I was glad to see some joint exercises between Israeli and United States Air Force sending a very strong message to the supreme leader that they need to stand down. They need to quit preparing for a nuclear weapon, or else we will cooperate with the Israelis to make sure that never happens.
So we'll see what happens, because there's no deadline on it. But you know they're not getting to a phase two in the peace negotiations. They're talking about expanding phase one.
Yeah, these are people who killed innocent men, women, and children on October the 7th. I mean, these are not normal people that you're dealing with. These are people who were determined. They're religious zealots who believe in sacrificing innocent people for their cause. And so the only thing they're going to recognize is the threat of retaliation. And President Trump certainly sent a very clear and loud message.
I hear you. And lastly, on DOGE, there is some concern that they're not going through the cabinet secretaries, but everyone likes the mission. What about Senator John Cornyn, more of a traditional, politician?
Well, I love DOGE. Elon Musk is providing a valuable public service by highlighting a lot of the crazy spending that's been going on for a long time. There just hasn't been the coalition of the willing to try to identify it and then to do anything about it. But I think a combination of Elon Musk and DOGE highlighting a lot of the wasteful spending and just crazy spending, it's not just wasteful, and along with the Republican majorities in both houses and President Trump in the White House, we're poised, I think, once in a generation opportunity to actually do something about our spending addiction here in Washington, D.C.
Senator John Cornyn, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. We come back. We'll take your calls. Also, we'll talk about nuclear. Is that going to be the future? I'm not counting on wind. Are you? Solar? Not really. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by former GOP strategist and host of the Rich Zeoli Show, Rich Zeoli. Available now on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I think there were times when they should have risen. I think what Al Green did was despicable.
This is an indictment, in my opinion, on the Democratic leadership. The visuals are not taking back the House in 2026.
I don't know who thought up the bingo signs, but they should be fired.
So those are Democrats, and a Republican that is really a Democrat in over at MSNBC, and you have Stephen Colbert. Because of the way they acted on Tuesday, you would think I still wouldn't be talking about the State of the Union address or an address to the joint session of Congress, but it was just so egregious, the behavior, and the backlash has been it's been just bubbling up. And the Democrats have to look at themselves and say, where do we even go from here? You want to hear from Chuck Schumer today to get his side of the story? I don't. You want to hear from Nancy Pelosi and find out why she can't get anything to keep her teeth in? I'm not interested. Al Green, still defiant. You have Congressman McGovern defending Al Green's behavior. You stand up and just start screaming at a sitting president. Are you nuts? How the hell is that a good idea? I mean, my goodness. Then they put out this social media video where they all open up by cursing. And that, guess who's behind that? Cory Booker is behind that. So good luck, guys. This is supposed to be a time in which the sitting party with all the power begins to lose momentum. They're only gaining momentum. Here's what Piers Morgan said. Kind of an interesting take as he was overseas and just got here. Cut 18.
If Donald Trump could have scripted a reaction from Democrats to his speech, it would have been exactly what unfurled before our eyes last night. I was watching it live here in New York, and every time I thought they couldn't plunge any lower, they plunged a little bit lower.
And it's true. And the 17 or the 14 walkouts and the 17 boycotts, don't forget that. Reince Priebus used to run the RNC, remember? Cut 22.
Well, it seems like they're hell-bent on committing suicide, and it makes no sense. I mean, if you said to the Republican National Committee in the Trump world, you couldn't pay for what the Democrats did last night. Just like, well, here's an idea. Let's start out with a senior citizen congressman shaking his cane at the president. Then we're going to move on to women dressed in pink who boo the idea of protecting women in sports. What the problem is, the Democrats are on the wrong side of normal. And they're sitting there while the president is thundering out these 80% issues that the American people support.
Yeah, that's 100% true. Senator Lindsey Graham has seen a lot. He's called it Trump derangement syndrome before. Cut 21.
You know, Trump derangement syndrome is real. I mean, Trump can get to all of us. You know him, I know him. You know, I love the guy, but it can be a handful. But one thing I've never let Trump do is make me cut my own throat. I will not let him do that. So I was at Biden. I visit Obama. I sit there. I clap when I should. When I don't like it, I just sit and be quiet. I think that's what America wants.
I think so, too. And Senator Lindsey Graham is also trying to do the best he can to be the go-between with Zelensky and President Trump, because everybody knows he's extremely pro-Ukraine. And that means when he speaks out, his words have a lot of weight. I personally am just stunned. I'm stunned that they're letting the squad run the place. That's what Nancy Pelosi did. She recognized the squad was a problem. She got them to vote. I'm not sure what she promised. I actually am sure what she promised. She said, if you vote for me for speaker and follow what I'm doing, I'll step aside after this term. And she did. And now no one's stepping up like Akeem Jeffries and controlling the squad. Maybe he likes the squad. Squad's boycotting. The squad's screaming. And now you have another woman in Jasmine Crockett who's getting all the headlines because she's just as vociferous as anybody on the left. But it's not something that's going to resonate. Nicole Wallace, former Bush staffer on MSNBC, tries to justify the Democrats not responding to a child overcoming cancer. Cut 17.
And I hope he has a long life as a law enforcement officer. But I hope he never has to defend the United States Capitol against Donald Trump supporters. And if he does, I hope he isn't one of the six who loses his life to suicide.
Unbelievable, right? I hope you don't take your own life when you eventually grow up and be a cop if brain cancer doesn't take you first. Is that the message? How inspirational. Wow, that's what I'm missing out when I'm not watching primetime or early evening on MSNBC. Yeah, every once in a while you wonder how we remain to be number one. It's basically we're number one because we have a lot of talented people here. And the other thing is nobody else wants to compete. We get number one almost by default. So we're going to talk about the future of energy. It's more and more people saying it's nuclear. Julianne Edwards thing. Then we're going to be joined by Senator Joe Manchin. Busy hour, Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
For the past few years, Washington has prioritized social agenda over practical energy policy. And as a result, we are staring down the barrel of an energy crisis with an electrical grid that is on the fragile verge of being completely overwhelmed. President Trump warned Americans in his inaugural address just 3 weeks ago, and Tennessee is not immune to this. So Tennessee's ambition to lead in nuclear innovation is much bigger than just competing with other states. This is about securing the future of America.
Governor Bill Lee, talking about nuclear energy, and with me in studio, if you're watching online, Julian Edwards is here, Chief Development Officer at the nuclear company, Chair of the U.S. Women in Nuclear. Julian, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Do you think America's finally ready to embrace nuclear again?
Absolutely. This is our time to shine. We need to start building more nuclear now and honestly securing our energy future as a country.
Burns clean. People are freaked out about it because they think nuclear bomb. They think Three Mile Island.
Yeah. I see the my parents, the baby boomer generation, definitely has that bias. But this next wave of generation is really becoming more informed that nuclear is used for such a beautiful, like, energy dominance, and it's allowing us to have this independence as a country.
Chinese are doing it, you said.
Yeah, yeah. They're actually building far more than us. They're building roughly 27 reactors right now. The United States technically is building zero. We've got some demonstration sites, but no real large nuclear being built
today. The last one you did was Tennessee.
Georgia. Yeah, Georgia was the one that just came online. That was Vogtle. Southern Company built those with a few partners, Westinghouse being one of them. But that was the last two reactors we built in over 30 years. So that muscle memory is gone.
Listen to the Treasury Secretary who joined us about what he sees the future when it comes to nuclear.
Secretary Burgum, Secretary Wright, the super strong members of the cabinet are following President Trump's priority for drilling, unleashing U.S. energy, crude oil, natural gas. We're going big in nuclear, and we are going to... It's going to bring down costs, but we're also going to become major exporters of energy, which will make the world more secure.
Have they reached out to a company like yours?
We've talked to a number of elected and appointed officials, absolutely.
Where is it at right now? Because seems to be a thirst for it.
Yeah, there is. And actually, we actually have this little thing called Loans Program Office that is investing in nuclear right now. They're also part of the Vogtle project. And so a lot of companies like ours are looking at where's the lowest cost of capital that exists today and who's going to put money into nuclear. Right now, the government can do that. There's also tax incentives that are enabling us through investment tax credits, production tax credits to make this pencil out. And that's why I'm here in New York as well, garnering support from private equities to understand, hey, what kind of return do you need and what type of guarantees do you need?
But didn't you guys make great progress? They say they're smaller than ever.
Yeah, I mean, there's nuclear companies that are looking at large, small, and micro. I would say our country's appetite is insatiable. We want 200 gigawatts. That's a lot of small modular reactors. I think you got to do both. You got to do large and small. I love the micro play, but I think that's only going to play in certain installations, like small military installations or maybe replacing diesel generators out in the oil and gas fields.
This is what I heard is a negative. You do have to provide security because it can be used as a weapon, right?
Yeah, you do. You have to have nuclear safeguards, and the U.S. is the best at that. We have set global industry standards for nuclear. That's why we have to keep building.
So what do you have to do to change perception? You think this new generation is not as crazed about nuclear energy. And we saw that Europe took everything down and now they're looking to put it back up.
I know. I mean, they're probably hitting themselves in the head right now. I'd say shows like this, the fact that you're interested in this topic and reaching your audience is the first step. We've got to like broaden our audience. We can't just talk to ourselves in the industry. And we've been doing that for decades. So we got to reach broader audiences like yours.
Is it cost prohibitive?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's capital intensive, but any infrastructure is. If you look at the long duration of the operating life of these plants, they're 60, 80 years. It is extremely, extremely low.
So then you have these blue states who decide, I'm not going to have nuclear. And that was really after the Japan disaster, the tsunami.
Yep.
So people thought, well, you know, they had nuclear weapon issues because it was covered by the ocean. And they said, we're going to take that down. In New York, they took down Indian Point.
I know.
And now our utility bills are through the roof.
I know. I know. If you build more nuclear, your cost per kilowatt hour goes down drastically. We should not be shutting down any more plants. We need to preserve our 94 reactors today and turn those that have been shut down back online. Sadly, you can't do that here in New York at Indian Point, but no more shutting down nuclear plants.
So what would a project like that cost if I have a municipality, if a city?
Yeah.
If I say, okay, I want to be powered by nuclear, what am I looking to spend?
I mean, it's around the same investment of an LNG terminal. You're looking at like anywhere from $5 to $10 billion, depending on how much you want to produce, right? So if you want 1,000 megawatts versus 300 megawatts, it kind of ebbs and flows. So it's a long-term investment, and it'll take about 5, 7, 10 years to build. Mm-hmm. China's doing it right now, building large reactors, technology that they actually got from us, in 5 years for $5 billion per reactor.
And you say they're signing 100-year deals with countries.
Yes, they are literally forging a path that we could be doing right now and we should be continuing to do, where they're bringing their technology to Kazakhstan, Iran, South Africa, and they're saying, I will sell you a reactor and I will also help you operate it and I will also take your spent fuel and help finance it. The U.S. has got to start thinking about nuclear as something that we export.
Have you guys thought about a marketing campaign?
Oh, yeah. We actually did a little bus tour last July. The nuclear company, which is untraditional for nuclear, I will tell you, went across six states, landed in D.C., and just started telling people, hey, there's this nuclear resurgence coming. What do you want to talk? What do you want to hear? Like, what are perhaps some of the biases you have or some misconceptions that you have that we can help demystify?
Wow, that's pretty impressive. Here's Doug Burgum, the Secretary of the Interior.
We can't be dependent. We're buying uranium from Russia for our nuclear plants. We have to be able to have those supply chains be right here. So we're going to do all of that. And when we do all of that, we're going to be able to build, baby, build.
That's what you plan on doing.
Absolutely. We have to get off Russia. We've been buying enriched uranium for them for decades, and we've slowly started to come off of that.
Do we have our own?
We have some enrichment, but we need to increase the production substantially. We don't have enough to maintain our operating fleet, which is why you see a lot of investment going into the whole fuel cycle.
And where is it? Where is the uranium?
Uranium's all over. I mean, it's a rare earth mineral. By the way, I just heard on your show just a couple of minutes ago, this mineral deal we're trying to do in Ukraine, they have mineral rights right below their feet. We need access to those. We buy from Canada, Australia, all over. I mean, it's a rare earth metal that is currently being used for nuclear power
today.
Does
Canada have this too?
Canada has uranium deposits. They don't use enriched uranium for their reactors today. But the United States, our technology requires enriched uranium. It's much more efficient.
And when people say, well, I don't want a bomb in my backyard, a potential bomb, what do you say to them about safety?
It's not a bomb. It's a beautiful generation source. Listen, if you're powering your iPhone or your Samsung phone every single night, it's coming from a source that is providing power 24/7. And that is a nuclear power plant. I mean, no other energy source can do it. Definitely not solar and wind. They're operating like 20% of the time.
All right, Julian Edwards, your final thought to anybody listening right now who's worried about it. I'm intrigued by it. I also know a lot of wealthy people who said this. The micro devices are the ones that really have them growing because it's so powerful, but yet it's not as complex.
Yeah, I would say building nuclear, large and small and micro, are so essential to a safer, stronger America. The jobs are plenty, they're high paying, and it's going to allow us to pull on a strategic lever that we have not pulled on in the past couple
years.
Is
there a mission to get to the administration?
Absolutely.
Do you have contacts there, or are you making inroads in? Because obviously it's two members of the administration are talking nuclear.
Yeah, I'll tap into your network.
Okay. But you would anyway.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How long would it take? If I sign a deal for Nashville, Tennessee, how long would it take until I have my nuclear power plant online?
If they cut these regulatory bureaucratic hurdles and I could just build, I mean, it could take anywhere from 7 to 8 years right now, but I could get it down to 5 if I have an order book to show.
Wow. And are you concerned about China beating us to fusion reactors?
I'm worried about China beating us on a lot of things, and I think we need to look at this strategically. Fusion, I think, is going to be a skip generation investment. I think it's coming, but we need to build now. We can't wait on fusion technology to become a reality.
Right. Do it now.
Do it now.
All right. Thanks so much. Julian, it's great to have you. Julian Edwards, Chief Development Officer at the Nuclear Company, Chairman of the U.S. Women in Nuclear. Julian, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Brian Kilmeade, back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
It's interesting because a lot of people say we're political. We try to stay out of politics. Possibly. I mean, we still kind of consider ourselves a comedy site at times. Sometimes more serious, sometimes not. It'll be interesting to see what happens after Trump, what they do with that media room. But yeah, I could see it. I do think there's a spot for a younger generation to consume news from a very different type of person. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, they're all new, and people just consume media a lot differently than they used to. And I don't know that the mainstream media has really caught up to that. It just opens doors for people to consume media, whether it's podcasts or Rogan or whatever it is. You don't have, you know, you're either getting your information from the local newspaper or like the local network TV. Now there's a million different ways to get it. You should never know
based on the outlet, like what they're going to say, just based on the outlet. But you do, like, in that's why people don't trust it. And even why does my crowd trust me? Because they've heard me say things that, like, the New York Times author, if you probably ask, like, how's Dave feel about this issue, this issue, this issue, they'd probably be wrong like 50% of the time. So yeah, why would you trust anybody if you already know what they're going to think, regardless of the issue, before you even ask the question?
So Dave Portnoy hanging out, talking about why he's going for Trump now. And he said essentially the same reason Joe Rogan said it, the same way Mark Zuckerberg, to a degree, has said it. And that is, the Democrats want no part of him. They don't want to talk about any issues that are practical. The DEI is a total turnoff. The whole women, girls, and boys sports, total turnoff. And they're more common sense than conservative. Dave Portnoy, too. He's like, why do you think I like Trump? Because it's not so much I like him. I look at the alternative, and it's not even close. And that's where a lot of people are at. And I get a lot of people saying that, you know, I was a Democrat, now I'm independent. So even if they don't want Trump, they don't want to be a Democrat because they don't like it. And I remember what Meghan McCain said about 3 weeks ago when she said for the first time in her life, you know, her family steeped in Republican tradition, being a Republican is cool. Imagine that. Being a Republican is cool. And that's really the case. And that's why they picked up with the younger people. And that's why the president is reluctant to get rid of TikTok. He felt as though he got exposed to TikTok, not made by TikTok, but exposed to a younger generation by TikTok. But Mr. President, you should realize, too, is that if TikTok, you think TikTok is powerful because there's nothing really come out against you there. But if you are to take on China in some type of trade war, which you are, you hit it with 25% tariffs. If you are to go aggressively for Israel, which you're doing, just know there'll be almost no positive stories on the news feed. So who reads a TikTok news feed? How about everyone 12 to 20? Most people that aren't watching Fox or the parents don't make them. So that is important. And that will get the president's attention. For example, Drudge. Drudge was a big conservative site, investigative news source. I guess people go to it now, but it's the most anti-Trump site outside the Daily Beast, Huffington Post in America. So you're not going to see anything positive from there. What happened? Well, someone else runs it. Matt Drudge might be getting paid off. I have no idea. But that does not look like a Matt Drudge site. But the media has gone crazy. And so far, it's been to Fox's benefit. And why do I say that? Look at the ratings. And when people want to see things that we all could see, like, for example, the address to the joint session of Congress yesterday on Tuesday. You're going to go there. And when you're going to go to the commentary, you're going to stay with us. Which is pretty interesting because for a while, it would be close. And depending on who was president, sometimes we would lose. That's not going to happen now. And after where the Democrats acted, they're even further back today than they started the week. Cut 20.
I think there were times when they should have risen. I think what Al Green did was despicable.
This is an indictment, in my opinion, on the Democratic leadership. The visuals are not taking back the House in 2026.
I don't know who thought up the bingo signs, but they should be fired.
Yeah, there were little round signs that were held up or erasable boards that were held up. And I thought that was just bad behavior. Trump did make it partisan, but that's him. He's ticked off. He was ticked off. You know, you've been going after me for 4 years. You gave me a hard time when I got the job 4 years. You told me I was illegitimate when I had the job. And then when I was out of a job, you said I'd never never get to elected office again. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And I don't mind telling you to your face. Mark, you're in Kansas. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how we doing, Brian?
Great. What's on your mind?
Hey, I've lived around a nuclear plant my whole life in southeast Kansas. And I think the biggest problem where people get scared is the word nuclear. If they would call them fission plants, I don't think we'd have had any trouble with that.
You know why? The first time we used nuclear
in there.
Yeah, the first time we used nuclear was the Nagasaki, Hiroshima.
Yeah, yeah, and that's all people think about. It's actually just splitting atoms to make steam to push the generator that's on top of the that pushes out the power. So I think that's one of the biggest things. It's that the nuclear wants to get out. Take that word out. Just call them fission plants.
Got it. Thanks so much, Mark. Change the name. Michael, you're in Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey, Brian, I sure enjoyed your previous guest. I've been thinking, we're shooting ourselves in the foot for not looking at nuclear more. Well, people say, what are these little small nuclear plants? We don't know how to do that. That's dangerous. No, we've had nuclear submarines since the 60s,
yeah.
And I can't remember any major nuclear incident on a submarine. There's your small nuclear plant. We do know how to do that. Thank goodness someone's looking at it.
Now, Michael, is the nuclear plant that was built in Georgia near Atlanta?
No. It's down near Savannah.
Okay. So, I mean,
yeah,
it's very interesting because we had Scott Bessent and the Interior Secretary both I didn't ask him about nuclear. They brought it up. So that's it. John Castamatidis, who owns Red Apple Media and refineries, I know he is very interested in some of these micronuclear plants because they're so small and can do so much. You don't need to have a big complex there. So energy's hot. It used to be we used to think talking energy is boring. It is hot right now. And that's how people want to use that as leverage. You saw Canada, the province of Ontario, their leader came out, Doug Ford, and said, we're going to stop. You can't use our energy. Well, it turns out he really doesn't have control of our energy. But the little bit he does, he says, we can't use it. Thanks. But there also is a huge imbalance with Canada. I'm not for these massive tariffs that we quickly pull back, which happened last time. But I am saying that, I'm saying I do want to have those have a bigger party. Real quick, yesterday, Elon Musk went up to Capitol Hill, at which time he explained to Republicans he would have done it to Democrats what he was doing. And he wants to hear about some feedback. And he said one of the feedback is no communication. We just get up in the morning and find out an area that I'm in charge of or a member of their committee has been cut. And it might be the best cut or worst cut, but you just have to inform us. Doge has to be able to get in touch with the cabinet secretaries. So that came out yesterday. And ultimately, they want to put it into legislation. For example, today, executive order, President Trump will say, I abolish the Department of Education. Problem, if it's established by Congress, it's got to be eliminated by Congress. So you're going to need eventually 60 votes. How are they going to get there? I'm not sure. Maybe they can just show quick results if states have control of their own money. It's not a matter of them not wanting to do it. You know, it's a matter of having control. You can do whatever you want. Get your money, spend what you want, and I will decide where I'm going to live. But the hope is and the theory is if you get rid of the Department of Education, the red states will be better than blue states, and that's when the moms go up and say, change the curriculum, change your approach, give me private school or give me school choice.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. I'm here back in New York. Great working with everyone in Washington, D.C. Kind of interesting getting home yesterday because the planes, I guess it was too windy to fly. They didn't tell us that. First, they delayed us for 2.5 hours and then thought, you know what? I'm just going to cancel this, which is great. So we just have to rush over and grab an Acela and was able to survive. We'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney in about 45 minutes. Mark Halpern is standing by, editor-in-chief of Two Way. And you could follow him at Mark Halpern. And before we get to Mark, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
To not stand for that little boy is aberrant and disgusting behavior. So they not only do they lose the high ground, but they shock the conscience of many Democrats.
That is Mark Halpern, by the way. A Democrat fallout picking up steam as their actions Tuesday reveal a party without a core set of beliefs and any semblance of responsible leadership, in my view.
Number two.
You know how long we've been waiting? For a long time in this country to have the kind of leadership with that kind of clarity. He's tired of watching these videos every weekend where hostages that are emaciated are released and bodies are turned over, and sometimes it's the wrong bodies, and he's lost his patience with it.
There is Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State. This is turning into the Trump doctrine, peace and freedom, both on display with two major theaters of conflict, Ukraine and Gaza. With Ukraine's efforts to stop the fighting, it's now close to putting all the pressure on Russia to show compromise. And with Gaza, a threat issued to their face, backed by the IDF, better have Hamas taking their ultimatum seriously because they want the hostages back. We will discuss that.
Number one.
Mayor Johnson, is Denver a sanctuary city?
Folks use that term differently. I can tell you what Denver does. We do
okay,
not.
Okay, I take that as a yes.
We don't ask about immigration status and delivering citizens.
You don't ask about
so
how much money the
number.
City of Boston has spent on illegal immigration?
We
are you out of your mind?
Yeah, some fireworks yesterday as the Democratic mayors had to defend their sanctuary city status. Meanwhile, the border is more secure than ever before. Now it's time to find out what's happening in our cities. Let's bring in Mark Halperin. Mark, welcome back.
Brian, nice to be back. I flew back from Washington to New York yesterday. Did I risk my life and not know it?
Wait a second. What time?
Like noon.
Okay, that was our problem. I guess we waited too long because we flew back around 4, which ended up being 8. Ended up being 5:30 cancel, 6:20 Acela. At which
That's
time
hideous.
We get to the tunnel and they go, you know what? We have a slowdown. We have signal issues. So it just took forever to get to the tunnel. That's why we should have listened to Joe Biden and built up our trains.
Yeah, we should have flown with me at noon.
That would have been great. So, Mark, what's your take on what you saw in the president's speech on Tuesday?
I'd say 3 quick things. One is, you know, as a matter of performance, including the caster in chief, bringing in all the folks to sit with the first lady. It was a very strong, a communication television show and, you know, hard to speak for that long and not be boring. But it was very, very well produced. And that's important because it is a TV show. And what if you're not conveying it well, you're not conveying it. Number two, I think the press and the Democrats continue to make the same mistake about President Trump that they made for a decade, which is he's mostly talking about things that are popular. It's not the extreme red meat MAGA base. It's stuff that tests very well in polls, 60-40, 70-30, 80-20. And the Democrats continue, because they're in their blue bubble on MSNBC and in elite circles, to think these are things that are just they're extreme, and they're not, they're popular. And that's a source of his political strength. It's a source of his confidence in that room. And then lastly, I'm really amazed, you played the clip from me, I'm amazed at the Democrats' conduct, both in and of itself and a lack of just normal human reaction to things, but also as an indication that they still not only don't have their act together after losing the election, but they don't really know how to do it. They don't even agree whether there is a problem. And amazingly, some Democrats think the way they behaved on Tuesday night was just fine.
So there is some fallout, though, and you pointed this out about Nicole Wallace. I knew her when she was Nicole Devenish, working for President Bush. She's on MSNBC, and she said this when talking about the 13-year-old who's managed to survive cancer, was only giving months to live, and was pointed out that his dream was always to be a cop, and they made him a Secret Service agent. And it was kind of a dramatic moment that everyone on the Democratic side seemed to ignore. Cut 17.
And I hope he has a long life as a law enforcement officer. But I hope he never has to defend the United States Capitol against Donald Trump supporters. And if he does, I hope he isn't one of the 6 who loses his life to suicide.
And you, from one of your subscribers, I guess it came to you and you put this out, that was the line in the sand. That you just thought that was the most ridiculous thing.
I knew her when she was Nicole Devenish, too, and you and I both know live TV stuff gets said, but I haven't seen her clarify or apologize or explain. And again, I just don't understand the human reaction to that little boy, his story, his the way he behaved, the way he hugged the head of the service. Just as a human being and, you know, as a parent, I just don't know how somebody could look at that and not be touched and say, this is above politics. Now, I've heard some Democrats say, Donald Trump was using that little boy as a prop. No, that's just not the way politics works. Boy, he wasn't tricked there. He wanted to come. He had a great interaction with the president in the Oval Office yesterday. And I just think that moment is going to stand for a lot of people, including, as you pointed out, one of my readers who said basically she was leaving the Democratic Party over it, as something that just demonstrates that for a large segment of the elite portion of the Democratic Party, they're so caught up in fighting Donald Trump that they can't really behave like normal humans in such a emotional situation with that little boy. That's just should be reflexive. It shouldn't require an intellectual point to react to him.
So, Mark, do you sense that a lot of this stuff was organized outside the signs that look like the auction signs and the erasable boards? Do you think there was a conscious effort, almost a meeting? Guys, we're not going to respond to anything Trump says, good or bad. Or do you think that was all just instinctive?
No, their plan was to highlight the impact that President Trump's moves and proposals would have on real people. And they asked, the leadership asked their folks, don't bring signs, don't make a ruckus, don't cause a scene. Now, not standing was not, as I understand it, an instruction, not applauding. It just kind of caught on. And that, look, there are some Democrats I've talked to, members of the House who were on the floor, and senators, who are really unhappy with the way it played out, who really think the party just absolutely blew it and played into Donald Trump's hands. But there are those who say, you know, we're not going to be muzzled. And the two Democratic leaders, Mr. Schumer, Mr. Jeffries, both of Brooklyn, New York City, they're both under amazing pressure, just strong pressure from the left wing of the party, the interest groups and the members of the Progressive Caucus, to be in resistance mode. And you saw kind of the chaotic and confused manifestation of this tension, where some members thought it was a disaster. And as I said, some think it wasn't enough.
It's incredible. So I was watching Bill Maher on Friday night, and it repeats again over the weekend. And he had Fareed Zakaria on, Rahm Emanuel, and he says the Democrats have to abandon their ultra-left and start thinking more traditional center-left, be more patriotic, be more pro-military. Besides Senator Fetterman, do you see anyone, and Joe Manchin was just in the building before, do you see anyone like that on the roster?
Yeah, there are people like that. Ro Khanna, congressman from California, is like that. Some of the other House members who are thinking thoughtfully, and senators who are thinking thoughtfully about the future of the party. The problem is, and again, I'm put in the sharpest of relief on Tuesday night, the energy in the party continues to be the anti-Trump wing of the party with a much different mindset about how to behave, how to think. I thought after the election that the Democrats were in really bad shape. And, you know, people whose judgment I trust said to me, don't forget, that's what people said about the Republicans after 2008 and Barack Obama's victory. And, you know, they said they'd be in the wilderness for 50 years. And then 2 years later, the Tea Party, you know, led to a thumping in the midterms. So I was like, okay, you know, maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe there's more strength to the Democrats and Trump weakness. But I don't see it right now. I can't tell you who good presidential candidates would be. I can't tell you what a good legislative strategy would be. I'm not hearing from any Democrats a lot of confidence that they can combat this. They're waiting for Trump to overreach and to take advantage of that. But they're in a world of hurt, and it's hard to see right now, or hard to at least describe right now, what a comeback looks like.
So, Elon, perhaps the most interesting thing that's happened, I think, is Elon Musk, one of the smartest guys in the world, certainly the most successful, has decided to use his energies to focus on what he thinks is wasteful spending and reduce the deficit in our country. And I think we all agree that it could be terminal. It could be really troublesome if we don't find a way to do something to pay down our debt. So paying interest on that doesn't become our number one expense, which it is right now. So he's cutting before cabinet secretaries are in place. Yesterday, he had a meeting with Republicans to kind of clear the air about what he wants to cut and how they should go forward. Cut 24.
Mr. Musk, what was your message in there to House Republicans? What was your message in there, Mr. Musk?
You know, there's a lot of opportunity to improve expenditures in the government, and then we're making good progress.
Should Congress have a vote on this? Should Congress have a vote on this?
And he went on to say, and according to people in there, he said, any communication, here's my cell phone number. Call me anytime. So can you give me an idea how it's playing inside Washington between Republicans and Democrats and DOGE?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is the way it's playing for Republicans right now. We know what the Democrats think. You know, they're against it. They're criticizing the cuts and probably for their own political good, maybe being too opposed. I spent a lot of my time when I was down there for the president's event on the Hill, and I've talked to a lot of Republicans. Even ones who are extremely pro-Doge, who think this is an amazing opportunity to do something that President Reagan didn't do, the Bushes didn't do, Trump didn't do in his first term, to actually reduce the size and scope of government and try to, as much as possible, eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse. They're worried. Some of them are worried because they think Congress does need to be involved, and that was part of Musk's message as he played there yesterday. Some of them are hearing from constituents, they're hearing from their hospitals, from their universities, from their major employers, that they're really concerned about some of the things that are happening. But a lot of them just say, you know, this needs to be done more carefully. It needs to have more oversight, more experienced hands here. So they want to keep the Musk energy, but they and aggressiveness, but they want more checks on it. And so that's why he went up there. And it's going to be interesting to see him navigate this, because up until the last week or so, he's just been open field running with the encouragement of the president, taking a lot of heat for this, and happily so, because it just doesn't bother him. But I do think you're going to see this go into a different phase now. And as you alluded to, now these cabinet secretaries are in place, and they're like, you know, I got to run my building. I can't have some guy coming in here and firing my team without my understanding what the implications of that are for morale, for the mission. And so I think those yesterday, that's kind of the fulcrum to a different phase of what's going to happen now, which will have a lot of tension within the party, because there's some people who say, if you don't go fast, it won't happen.
Because people get dug in with their special interests. Yeah. And yeah. They say, you know, if you fire these people, I'm not going to get reelected. I'm going to hear it at my next town hall. And they're going to just, and that's why you do the hard part, and you can divorce yourself from it and go, I had nothing to do with this.
Exactly. But they're shifting from, this is a spectacle that I can say I'm not in charge of, to, well, now I'm kind of in charge because, you know, I'm a member of the Senate, or I'm a cabinet secretary. And again, it's one thing to hear from some, you know, left-wing activist at a town hall. It's another if the president of the university says, you're going to decimate my, you know, my cancer research department, or my hospital says, you know, you're going to put our hospital out of business. That's the job of a senator or a member of the House to go to the White House and say, like, you know, we got to talk about this, because this may not be a good cut. And that's, again, why some people are saying, you know, move fast, break things, and fix what you need to fix later, because if you don't, they'll become unbreakable, because the deep state, the permanent bureaucracy, the iron triangle of outside interest groups and member of Congress and the media will say no more cuts.
Editor-in-chief of Two-Way with us right now, Mark Halpern. Mark, last topic, Gaza. And we for the longest time, we never talked to terrorists, and we were not going to talk to Kim Jong-un. Trump says, yeah, I'm talking to him. And he, of course, met with him. But the whole Russia investigation was hanging over his head. Never got the historic attention it got, you know, that I thought it deserved. Even if it didn't turn out, well, this kind of breaks traditional diplomacy. Adam Bowler was talking with members of Hamas a couple of days ago, maybe it was yesterday with time change. And now the president comes out with a Truth Social post. And here's a piece of it. Release all the hostages now, not later, and immediately return all the dead bodies of the people you murdered, or it is over for you. And he goes on to rip him personally and says, essentially, I'm going to give the IDF everything they need to finish you off. Put that in perspective on how unique that is for an American president.
Well, it's very unusual, and not unique only because Trump has done stuff like this before, but it's certainly a bold thing to say. Trump's, you know, one of his big things on foreign policy is speak loudly, carry a big stick, and speak so loudly you don't need to use the big stick. And I think that's what he's hoping to have here. It's a challenge not just to the Hamas leadership, but, you know, a lot of reports out of Israel that some of the terrorists hostage taking has been done by civilians just in apartment buildings. And the president wants them to know they can't run or hide either. If they've been involved in this, the U.S. is going to track them down. And of course, he gave a green light to Netanyahu and Israel to say, you know, go do what you need to do. We'll support you. So it's almost a Sabbath in Israel. I don't know that anything's going to happen today, but I wouldn't be surprised if over the weekend there was some aggressive action, because the president, this, you know, people think, well, the negotiations are a sign of weakness. No, as you said, the president will talk to anybody. But also, I think they're sending the message to Hamas that time is up. The U.S. and Israel are just not going to stand for this. And unlike Zelensky, who the president clearly doesn't have much fondness for, he likes Bibi, and he wants to get this resolved. He met yesterday in the Oval Office with eight freed hostages, and I think the president was inspired by that to say, you know, we're done. This is not going to go on any longer. These eight got out, but there's others still in there, including Americans. So this is a volatile situation, but as you correctly say, what he put on Truth Social is not something you've seen previous presidents do, and it reflects his temperament and his attitude about what's going on right now.
Mark Halpern, always great. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Brian, thank you. Good to talk to you.
You got it. And by the way, totally opposite of President Biden, who was saying, don't go into Rafah. Get that aid in there or else. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news. Unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Why are you playing another season?
The biggest thing is that I love playing the game of football.
That's a good reason.
I don't think it was my best outing. You know, I think I let my guys down in a lot more moments than I helped them. Especially if you look at my track record and how I've been in years past.
How big of a factor was losing a Super Bowl in the decision?
It was probably the biggest factor.
If you would have won, would you have come back for another season?
I mean, it's a pretty cool way to go out, but I think I would still have this love for the game and the feeling and, yeah.
If you want to play, you want to play.
Yeah. I know I got one on my contract, and I'm going to give you guys everything I got, baby.
So Travis Kelce is saying he's coming back, which is good news for the league because they love seeing Taylor Swift, and they turned a lot of women on to the game, so that would be good. There was women watching the game. They say 40% of the audience is women, but now they are really watching just for that cutaway. But Travis Kelce has had a fantastic career, but I was at the game. I thought he was not even looked to play. I don't know what he was doing. And the night before, walking back to my hotel, I said, what's with the paparazzi? As I'm walking down the street, they say, well, Travis Kelce's having dinner there. And I'm thinking to myself, night before a game, he's having dinner at like 7 o'clock at night. I guess you could do that if you've been in the Super Bowl so much. But maybe that played into why he seemed so indifferent in the game. After a while, you lose your hunger when you win it all over and over again. So he's coming back. Let's see what the Chiefs can do, as they always seem to reload. They have enough talent. I wish the Giants could say that.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I want you guys to respond to this. So somebody, it's a right-wing radio commentator who was very popular, said to me, the problem with Democrats is they don't have any manly enough candidates, that their Democrats are not manly enough, and that's why they can't win elections. What do you guys think about that?
Well, listen, I think that's partly what Andrew Cuomo was doing. If you think about what was going on with Biden, some of that, he was old, he was weak, he wasn't manly enough. He didn't project strength in the way that Donald Trump was able to.
Yeah. Same age, but different. Or in our minds now, those things are equal.
Exactly.
Right? That's the only way.
There is a comeback movement for masculinity. The question is, can you be masculine and embrace your masculinity and also be a decent person at the same time? And what are the boundaries for that, and how? You know, and is masculinity or femininity going to be the guiding issue for voters at the polls at a time when they're concerned about all these other things? Like, there's going to be a lot of women voters who want, if they're going to vote for a man, they want a man who will take care of women and represent women well as represent men well.
Yeah,
but they also care about...
Or maybe they're tradwives.
Yeah, I mean, well, but at least that was the messaging out of this election. There was so much conversation about the gender divide in voting. I'm sure we're going to keep talking about this.
That was a little of the conversation on CNN as they talked about what it means to be a man and to get votes. Remember the longest time the worst thing you could do is act manly? And I remember a couple of people I know which were in commercials, and they were saying, we have the hardest time finding a prototypical male for parts, for movie parts and for, let's say, rugged male parts for still picture photography. I also have this to share with you. The House has just voted, along with some Democrats, to censure Texas Congressman Al Green for his embarrassing behavior screaming at President Trump on Tuesday night. It made the whole party look stupid. Nobody looked to contain him. No one looked to stop him. I'm not sure if anyone put him up to it, but he was not upset when he came out to the hallway. So I'll take any punishment I get because it's worth it because negative things about Trump. So Al Green, finally, a little bit of justice, because that's one common refrain I get. When are people going to have to pay for their lies that they were pushed forward, for the things that they put into media, and for their actions? This guy, Al Green, should have been stopped within the first minute he stood up. Instead, he must have screamed for like 5 minutes. And then as he was leaving, he put his cane up in the air and started screaming at other people. Then they bring in 3 or 4 other Secret Service agents. But the first guy came up, spoke to Nancy Pelosi, spoke to him. Then he went back and walked away. Then he came back and took him. It took the speaker to bang on the gavel to say, get him out, throw him out. And now Al Green is out. But that old behavior, all the panels, if Republicans are smart, they will hit them over the head with it. I know that Joe Manchin was just on our channel just saying how despicable the Democrats acted. I don't doubt it. Here's Rachel Maddow trying to make sense of the way the Democrats, and make excuses by the way the Democrats acted. Cut 16.
This is disgusting. The president made a spectacle out of praising a young man who thus far survived pediatric cancer, as if the president had something to do with that.
What an idiot. Do you even listen to how he introduced him? A kid that wanted to, even though he thought he was dying, wanted to see it visit as many police stations as possible at a time in which everyone wanted to fund, to defame, like you, Rachel Maddow, the police. So as he got older, now he's 13, and he seems to be in remission. I don't know. I guess you want to leave hope out that he's going to get cancer again? Thus far, survived pediatric cancer? And then they want to give him a special notice because it was a kid that liked law enforcement at a time in which nobody else was. And everybody points out other people doing inspirational stories. And the thing is, I think it lessens it if you point out a story that's inspirational and say, I'm responsible for that. A little bit later, he talked about a Russian hostage he got out. But I guess it's no big deal. Cut 22. Reince Priebus.
Well, it seems like they're hell-bent on committing suicide, and it makes no sense. I mean, if you said to the Republican National Committee in the Trump world, you couldn't pay for what the Democrats did last night. Just like, well, here's an idea. Let's start out with a senior citizen congressman shaking his cane at the president. Then we're going to move on to women dressed in pink who boo the idea of protecting women in sports. What the problem is, the Democrats are on the wrong side of normal. And they're sitting there while the president is thundering out these 80% issues that the American people support.
It's just fascinating. By the way, 10 minutes are going to go on FBN. You'll see what's going on there. But it's fascinating to see this going on because there's no one stepping up or saying anything. But if I'm Republicans, I hit them over the head with it as long as I could. Because you want to make sure that you get your legislation passed. You also want to see that maybe some Democrats are in the survivor mode and say, yeah, I watched Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi shot. Hakeem Jeffries has no instincts, never should be speaker. I'm going to save myself. I'm in a purple state. Maybe you can get some House members to pass some legislation going forward, especially if you're talking about funding the government and you're talking about oil and gas. If you're in Pennsylvania, can't be anti-oil and gas. If you're in West Virginia, you shouldn't really be anti-oil and gas. But also, what I thought was interesting is David Axelrod, who mostly was against the speech, by the way. I watched all of his comments. He said that Trump was too partisan in his speech, but also said this. And then Simone Sanders, who's head of communications for Jill Biden and Michael Steele. Cut 20.
I think there were times when they should have risen. I think what Al Green did was despicable.
This is an indictment, in my opinion, on the Democratic leadership. The visuals are not taking back the House in 2026.
I don't know who thought up the bingo signs, but they should be fired.
Right. I think they might have maybe handed them out, got them in bulk. Who knows? But when Democrats go out and do that, that's a good sign. Because one thing about Republicans, and, you know, Karl Rove will come out and criticize Trump. He'll just call balls and strikes. You know, it's very rare when Democrats are actively criticizing Democrats. I mean, when Joe Biden lost it, everyone turned on him. Kamala Harris suddenly walked on water. She'd have a bad speech. Maybe a Van Jones would speak up, but then they get right back in line. And now you have a situation where they're in the minority. They're 7 weeks into the Trump term. And after that display, no one can really make excuses for it. The other thing I want to bring up, too, is what's happened with tariffs. The president has reversed where he is on tariffs, put him on hold again for Mexico and Canada. Oh, excuse me, and for cars. The market shot up 500 points. Now it's down 100 points. But with the tariffs, it's pretty much all over the place. And the automakers called him up and said, I'm going to have to charge between $3,000 and $10,000 for a new car if we don't find a way to get rid of the tariffs with Canada and Mexico. And now he's going to hit China with 25% tariffs. Big story in the Wall Street Journal today, which I found kind of interesting, that said that China is worried they're going to lose the Cold War the way the Soviets did. And as soon as Trump got elected, they quickly, President Xi said, quickly study the Cold War the second time and find out why the Soviets lost it. And the one thing the U.S. had that the Soviets didn't, they isolated the Russians, Moscow. Because we had so many allies, we were not a country looking to take things from you. We're looking at a country to protect you. and the rest of the world wanted to be free. They didn't want to be Northern Vietnam. They didn't want to be North Korea. They wanted to be free, and that was part of it. Plus, our economic principles are better. So President Xi is focusing on building up relationships. That's why with Trump, I like the fact that he's not afraid to take on allies, because when it comes to trade, money's money. But I also think you should keep in mind, too, that we got to make it rewarding to be allies with us, because we're fundamentally a great country who wants other countries to excel while doing business with our country. We don't want to give some developing countries their only choice, since nobody wants the Russians, terrible leadership, terrible country, terrible philosophy, to go, well, I'm going to go with China. And we, you know, a little bit earlier on the show, I was talking to an expert in nuclear energy, and she was saying they're really concerned because China is spreading, using American technology, spreading nuclear energy throughout Africa and developing nations, and trying to get a one in on their rare earth and their relationships, because they don't want to be isolated in the world, because China's got to export, consume, because they're not consuming as consumers in a country, because they have no women, because they would have the one-child policy. They're in a situation where their economy's not doing well. And in the long term, if you can't sell to other countries, if there's all types of sanctions and tariffs, it doesn't spell good fortune for you. Let's go to Lisa in Dayton. Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Keep in mind, June 21st, I'll be in Dayton. So I hope everyone could join me. I get on stage, BrianKilmeade.com. WHIO right, listeners especially. What's on your mind?
Well, I would like to ask your opinion. What do you think would be an effective way for Democrats and the media to counter the lies that Donald Trump says?
In what way?
Because, well, calling him out on it. So, for instance, in his State of the Union, he talked about all of these Social Security recipients over the age of 100. Okay.
Right.
It has been proven that they are in the system, but they are not actually receiving payments.
But they're in the system that needs to be culled and need to be. Some of them are getting payments. Some of them aren't. The one that's 330 years old, I have no idea how that could emanate. But it seems sounds like a data entry issue. But there are so many problems with our systems. I don't think you should look at that. I don't think there's even a Democrat that thinks there's a problem with our systems.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everyone. Matter of moments, I'm going to go on FBN with Stuart Varney. I would like to add this. Afterwards, I could probably squeeze in some calls. And next hour, 12 o'clock Eastern, I'll be on Outnumbered. And don't forget, Sundays at 10 p.m., of One Nation. So a lot coming up. And meanwhile, I'll go on with Stuart Varney in just a moment. And we'll talk a little bit about politics and we'll expand on some of the things you've been calling about and we have been discussing. So we'll see how that goes. Let's listen in.
Suggest that pretty soon the price of gas, not that gas, but regular gas, is going to come down. It's 10:51 Eastern time. That means bring in Brian Kilmeade. Brian, President Trump issued a, quote, last warning to Hamas. He wants all hostages returned and says he'll give Israel whatever it needs to finish the job. Earlier, State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce told us Hamas cannot continue to exist.
Best allies, it is time for us to return to the notion that our allies deserve support. What Hamas did was evil, cannot continue to exist. There will be no resolution to the Gaza situation as long as Hamas has any power or influence in that region. President Trump needs to be taken seriously. He follows through on what he says.
All right, Brian, what do you think President Trump's going to do? Maybe he'll leave it up to Israel. What do you think?
Well, he met with the hostages yesterday, so he understands the story and their saga and who's left behind and how bad their lives were and their captivity was, and he knows how these terrorists think. So Adam Bowler spoke to Hamas yesterday as a hostage negotiator, and I'm not sure what emerged from that, but he's going to have a conversation with the president. But think about the difference, Stuart. You had President Biden making Netanyahu the bad guy. You better let more aid in there. You better not go into Rafah. You're not getting 2,000-pound bombs. You don't need them, as if he's ever been to battle. And now you have a president that says, hey, I've had it with you. You basically have a couple of days to produce all the hostages, or I'm going to unleash your biggest nightmare, the IDF, who are begging to be unleashed. And if you think the Hezbollah is going to distract us, forget it. The Houthi rebels are going to be a distraction. Think twice. I think Iran is going to think twice, too, about helping out. So they really, it's got to be very stressful in those on those Western-made tunnels that were financed by us right now, because Mike Waltz said the same thing. There is no scenario where Hamas controls Gaza. And we just saw there's no other group controlling the Palestinians that could be an alternative. That's why a two-state solution is not worth the breath that we're using the statement, because it's got no future.
Trump's making waves all around the world, and that's a fact. Then there's this, Brian. Democrat Senator Fetterman, he went after his own party for their protests to Trump's joint address Tuesday night. He said it only makes Trump look more presidential. Now, Fetterman's getting a lot of heat from Democrats for that. I'm not really surprised, are you?
I don't think he cares. I'm pretty convinced he doesn't. Obviously, he sells to be pretty self-assured when you wear a hoodie all day and shorts in the middle of the winter. But he has made the most sense of anyone. And that's what Joe Manchin was just on our other channel, on Fox News channel. He was the one who made a sense maybe 85% of the time. Hey, I'm a Democrat, but I'm a sensible Democrat. John Fetterman is an army of one. Elise Slotkin, perhaps, got some of those tendencies. She ran on saying she liked Donald Trump, essentially, in Michigan. So besides that, it's a minority situation. So John Fetterman should stand his ground. He's on the right side here. It's better for the country. It's better for the country if there's a Democratic Party that is center-left as opposed to way over here, because way over here is disturbingly dislodged from America, the pulse of the American people.
It's so yesterday, that's what it is. I heard you were talking smack about British soccer fans with Piers Morgan on Fox and Friends this morning. Watch this.
It's so weird for a Brit to be arrogant about soccer. It's so unique. You never get that.
It's not
at
soccer.
All.
It's right. Football.
We know.
If you think a British guy is going to lose to an American.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Piers Morgan, he beat you, Brian, in a soccer kicking competition. Do you have anything to say?
Yes, Stuart. Can you review the tape, please? You have a huge staff. Have them roll back the tape. He shot all six balls, did not give me a chance to go against him, or else he would have no shot. And you all know, Brits feel as though they know more about soccer than anybody else in the world, especially Americans. So I have to deal with that on a daily basis. When I see you by the water cooler at the Christmas party, I always get that Varney swagger. I know more. The World Cup's coming. FIFA's got their now World Cup club championships. I have to deal with that on a daily basis. And sadly, it came out on the air this morning, and you made me relive that moment, but it's something that needs to be addressed. And you're the only one with the guts to bring it up on your show.
Yeah, typical Stuart Varney. Brian Kilmeade, thanks for joining us this morning.
All right, thanks for the swag.
I liked your style, though. You know how to kick the ball. Let's see with your left foot next time, not your right foot.
You got it.
Charlie Hurt, coming up.
Jim is in Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Mr. Kilmeade, I wanted to ask you, why do you think that Russia is at fault in this Ukrainian incident, you know, this war that we got going on? I mean, I understand that they invaded.
Yeah.
That they started.
Do you need to say anything else after that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I want to know, why do you think that Russia would even trust the United States after they keep breaking agreements after agreements? They broke the Budapest Agreement. They broke the Minsk Agreement. Why would they trust the United States?
So who broke the Budapest Agreement? Who broke the Minsk Agreement? The Russians ignored it, and they invaded another country, and they also took a piece of Georgia, and it's the U.S.'s fault? It's like, hey, why don't you blame the guy that got punched in the face for putting his face in the way of the fist? So old Zelensky's doing his fight, leading his country to retain their autonomy. And all Russia's doing is getting humiliated on a daily basis as they've lost almost 800,000 from the battlefield and over 200,000, sadly, to death and destruction. And if you want to know about how much they want peace, we got a hint yesterday. They were bombing Zelensky's hometown. So Well, I want all the pressure on Russia to come forward and let us know that out of the 25 times they lied, this is the time we can trust them. I would not. And I think that Europe is going to put 30,000 troops in there. And that would stop, I think, Russia from doing that.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, everybody, Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. This is the show that you tuned into, and for that, I appreciate it. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, but around the country, around the world. Special thanks to everybody who came in to visit us in Washington. We were able to see the president's address on Tuesday, and the ramifications are still being felt today. Brad Meltzer standing by. Congressman Michael Lawler will also be joining us. And then we'll also take a look at fentanyl with Billy Baldwin and how both sides have let this scourge just ravage the country. Quick note, Mark, Al Green has been censured, that the embarrassing congressman from Texas, for standing up and shouting, waving his cane at President Trump while he spoke in front of 35 million people and probably people around the world. So it was a bipartisan censure, both sides. And then he stood on the floor and some people rallied around him as if he's proud of himself. He should be embarrassed by himself, but he doesn't even have any sense of embarrassment or contrition. President Trump put out a Truth Social statement saying essentially he is a joke and a clown, and he should be forced to take an IQ test. I agree. There's got to be something mentally wrong with a guy like that. Why would anybody in Texas want this clown representing him? So that's one thing that's taking place. The other thing, the president put out a Truth Social post today saying that he's moving to have the new Secretary of Education begin to dismantle the department and end the Department of Education and bring it back to the states. Take that same money and put it back to the states so they can handle their own destiny, their own school system. They know better. All right, let's bring in a guy that's got a book out, certainly a bestseller, Brad Meltzer. Brad, welcome back. The name of your book, Make Magic, it's based on last year's commencement address to the University of Michigan. Welcome back, Brad.
Good to be here, my friend.
So what's the first off, do you ever remember a time when they've been more polarized on Capitol Hill?
We talked about it, and it was 1960. It was a 1960 election. It was Nixon versus Kennedy. Closest election of the 20th century. Whatever side you were on, you thought the other side were complete and utter morons. Does that sound familiar to you? And here we are again. And that's why I gave this commencement address, is I saw what was happening. You know, I was speaking in front of 70,000 people at the University of Michigan. They asked me to be the commencement speaker. And I said, you know, what do you say? It's a spot that usually the president of the United States gets in an election year. I mean, Bush gave it, Obama gave it, LBJ announced his Great Society at Michigan's graduation, and they picked me, Brian. And here I am going, okay, what do you say to all these kids and 70,000 parents watching? And what I decided to talk about was there are some things that can't be explained, and those things are magic. But when you talk to magicians, there are only four types of magic tricks. There's one, you make something appear. Two, you make something disappear. Three, you make two things switch places. And four, you make one thing and you turn it into something else. And that's the hardest trick of all, transformation. And I was given this address to 70,000 people, but all I cared about was one. My son was in the audience. And we can talk about what each of the tricks are, but that's the one I cared about, is my son. And I knew that I'm not that special. There were so many parents that wanted us to give our kids advice, especially in this divided time, that they could use. And the speech went viral, and all these people started asking for the text of the speech and said, can you give me the text of the speech? They were tracking me down, and finally all these publishers came, and we said we should turn this into a book, and that's where Make Magic, the book of inspiration you didn't know you needed, was born.
So here is a little from that speech, cut 32.
I stand here today as a proud Michigan alumnus, but also as an even prouder parent of one of the graduates. And when I told my son Jonas that I would be today's graduation speaker, his reaction was probably the same as many of yours. And this is a direct quote, what my son actually said. You, not Tom Brady? There's so many people they can pick. And he goes on, it's like a 13th seed winning March Madness.
So you had some fun, and you addressed the elephant in the room. You're not Tom Brady, but you have an unbelievable background, and you are the perfect pick.
Well, you know, here's what happened is that the third trick, the first one, you make something appear. We can talk about what you make disappear, but it was the third trick, taking two things and making them switch places. That was the real magic, because what I talked about is that when I was 13 years old, my dad lost his job. And what I wanted to talk about there was empathy. That's what empathy is. It's switching places with someone else and looking through their eyes. And when I was 13, my dad lost his job. Had to start over from nothing. We had no money. We had to move in with my grandparents in a one-bedroom apartment. Six of us, my mom, my dad, my sister, myself, and my two grandparents in this one bedroom. And all the neighbors in the building were complaining, trying to get us evicted, because they were like, you can't have six people in one apartment in such a small space. And one neighbor across the hall from my grandmother saw what we were struggling with and said, why don't you take my apartment? I'm going to move out for a little bit. You take my apartment until your family gets back on their feet. Nicest thing anyone's ever done for me. And I remember as a kid, her name was Mercy, but I always heard it as Mercy. And make no mistake, mercy and empathy is what this woman showed us. And today, cruelty and venom and making fun of those we disagree with has become sport in our culture. But cruelty and venom aren't signs of strength. They're signs of weakness and petty insecurity. What takes strength is kindness and showing empathy. And Brian, when I said those words, 70,000 people exploded. I couldn't believe they were cheering for that. And that's what went viral. All these famous people started sharing that section. And that third magic trick about empathy and kindness made the speech go viral. And it just shows you how much we're all starving for some empathy and for some kindness right now. We're so divided as a nation. And that was, to me, the best advice I could give my kids. And, you know, anyone who needs some inspiration, whether it's a great graduation present or just inspiration for yourself, or you want someone, your kids or your grandkids, your nieces, your nephews, to have some inspiration, that's what Make Magic as a book is for.
So how do you take a speech and make it a book?
Yeah, so, I mean, basically I had to rewrite the beginning and the ending to make it work, and obviously pulled out the Michigan parts, but we filled it in and we made it high design. So it's a beautiful kind of art book now that has those words, but it also shows you these amazing things because it's real advice, right? Empathy, if you want to know how to get it, when you talk to social scientists, empathy is malleable. So when we get overwhelmed and we get all this bad news, we shut down, right? That's why we shut the TV and we turn off our social media. We just get overwhelmed, but we can't shut down. We need you right now. You can't shut down. And empathy is malleable. If you want more empathy, you just have to want more empathy. That's truly what it is. It's like that's why you make your most friends during your first year of college and high school, because you're open to making new friends. And so each of the magic tricks is actual advice to bring inspiration and bring us some much-needed kindness in the world, because, man, we're starving for it.
And where'd you get the inspiration for doing that? I mean, you need a reason. You got to do a speech. You got a deadline. You have a length, and you have a mission. But where'd you get the inspiration to come up with that theme?
Yeah, you know, the inspiration came from my obsession, I think, with magic. And when I heard about those four magic tricks, but the real inspiration came from the second magic trick, right? The second magic trick is what you have to make disappear. And what people are tempted to say, make your fear disappear. But let me challenge you for a moment, is when I was in high school, I spent 4 years scooping ice cream at the local Häagen-Dazs in the mall. And this woman, I remember coming up to me, she starts snapping her fingers at me, and she starts yelling at me that I got to sue you. She's like, serve me now. And I said, ma'am, I'll be right with you. And she said, no, you need to serve me now. And I said, you know what, ma'am? You're being rude. I'm not going to serve you. And she screams in my face, Brian, you're going to be working at this miserable ice cream store for the rest of your miserable life. And I said to her, ma'am, if I am working here for the rest of my miserable life, you're still never getting any ice cream. And for years, I used to tell that story laughing, saying it never bothered me, but it did bother me. It really got to me because it made me feel like my life was going to be small. That woman made me feel. I felt like my life was going to be like my dad's, where he struggled his whole life. I thought I was going to have that same struggle. And what you have to do is not make your fear disappear, but you got to harness your fear. I want my kids to know, harness your fear, use it, let it motivate you. That's where the speech came from, is this one woman. And you got to not vanquish your critics, prove them wrong. And I'll tell you, last night, I haven't been able to really tell this story. But last night, my buddy, who used to scoop ice cream with me at Haagen-Dazs, sends me a picture. He went to the Barnes Noble and he bought a copy of Make Magic. And he said, "Man, I wish that woman could see you now." And I said to him, and I love the fact I get to tell you that story that 25 years later, that's where I got the motivation from, was this one woman who just got to me.
And what you would probably say is thank you, because you motivated me.
If I could meet her today, I would thank her. I was so mad at her for all those years, but if I could meet her today, I would say thank you. And I want my kids to learn that sense of humility. I want my grandkids, God willing, one day to learn that sense of humility. That's what the whole speech is about, is trying to go trick by trick and showing people how you can really apply them.
Go get him. Brad Meltzer, pick up his book. It's get out of the day-to-day play-by-play of life and think big picture with Make Magic. Thanks, Brad. Congratulations.
Thank you, brother.
All right, when we come back, Congressman Mike Lawler joins us. He's going to bring us inside the censure that just took place as Akeem Jeffries addresses the country. And at the bottom of the hour, Billy Baldwin, actor, producer, writer of a brand new book that looks at fentanyl death incorporated. And we look at it. He looks at it with pulls no punches in a brand new documentary.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Republicans are on the run with respect to the economy. Not a single bill, not a single executive order, and not a single administrative action has been put forth by Donald Trump or House Republicans to improve the economic circumstances of the American people. And folks are taking notice all across the country, which is why his approval ratings aren't going up, staying the same. They're going down, particularly as it relates to the economy. Republicans are on the run as it relates to the economy. Republicans are on the run as it relates to health care. They're not even having town hall meetings anymore because they are afraid to hear from their own constituents who do not want them to enact the largest Medicaid cut in American history.
That is some great spin. Akeem Jeffries, after the House just voted 224 to 198, 10 Democrats voted with the Republicans to censure Al Green, an embarrassment to the country, to get up and scream at a president like that. Thought it was bad when Joe Wilson one time did it on instinct, wasn't something planned. It was on Obamacare, which was highly volatile at the time. Marjorie Taylor Greene, I didn't think it was right when she yelled out at Joe Biden. But Al Green to sit up there and just scream and expects not to get censured, and then he stands on the floor like a hero after he gets censured. With me right now is Congressman Mike Lawler. He is on the Foreign Affairs Financial Committees, and we'll talk about that. But, Congressman, what do you think about, first off, the censure? Obviously, he deserved that.
No question, Brian. I mean, the conduct and behavior the other night was an absolute embarrassment. And, you know, I know you were in the chamber for it.
Yep.
But I will tell you, I mean, the American people obviously only saw snippets because most of the time the camera was understandably focused on the president. The behavior throughout the speech was abhorrent. You had members that refused to stand and applaud for the first lady, the cabinet, the president when he walked in. None of the Democratic leadership joined the escort committee, the first time ever. That has never happened, that you don't escort the president of the United States into the chamber. You had Democrats refusing to stand and applaud for a child with cancer who became a Secret Service agent. That was the most touching thing, to watch him hug the Secret Service director. You had Democrats refusing to stand and applaud when the president announced that the terrorist that killed 13 U.S. service members was captured and being transferred to U.S. custody. They refused to stand and applaud for the widow of a slain police officer from New York City. They refused to stand and applaud for the mothers of children who were murdered by illegal immigrants. I've never seen anything like it in my entire life. You can like or dislike Donald Trump. You can agree or disagree with Donald Trump. Fact is, Donald Trump is the president of the United States. The American people spoke. They wanted a change in direction. And rather than find area of commonality, rather than find area of unity, my colleagues showed complete disdain for the American people and the direction that they chose to put this country on.
Congressman, so he got censured. Hakeem Jeffries, what about what he said that you guys haven't done anything for the economy?
It's nonsense. I mean, first of all, the president has already enacted serious changes and reforms across the scope of the federal government. He is providing real regulatory relief to help open up our capital markets. Capital markets were restricted under Joe Biden. It's part of the reason small businesses couldn't get loans, couldn't get capital into the economy. You look at the fact that, you know, mortgage interest rates were at a 30-year high because of Joe Biden's reckless inflation. We are trying to rein in the size and scope of the federal government to reduce inflation, reduce costs. We are increasing domestic production of energy, which is critical if you are going to reduce the cost of manufacturing, the cost of transportation, the cost of goods and services. All of this is going to take effect. And then you look at what we're doing on the tax bill, providing real tax relief to middle-class families all across this country, including lifting the cap on salt, including no tax on tips. This is important for families all across this country, and that's why all of this is starting to take effect, and you will see the economy is going to rebound very quickly as this takes effect.
So, Congressman, I think you know what's going on at Barnard College, and it's got the attention of President Trump with his anti-Semitism, the whole raging in certain institutions in this country. I'm astounded that it's still happening. I'm astounded that the president of a university will deal with these terrorists who are taking over these classrooms. And now the president says, if you don't straighten this out, you could lose funding, federal funding. What should the president know about what's happening here in New York?
Well, there's no question. In the aftermath of that CUNY law school graduation speech 2 years ago, I introduced a bill that would strip any institution of higher learning of federal dollars if they promote or sanction anti-Semitic events on their campuses. These university administrators have a responsibility, first and foremost, to keep the students safe. They should not be allowing this to take place. These students should not only be expelled, they should be arrested and prosecuted for criminal offenses. They are engaged in anti-Semitic hate crimes, among other activity, including, breaking into these buildings, occupying them. It's absolutely outrageous what has been allowed to transpire on these campuses. It's why I introduced the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act.
Right.
Last Congress, we reintroduced it again. We need to get that passed and signed into law to ensure that Title VI of the 1964 Civil Rights Act is enforced, and that anti-Semitism is defined, and that they take action against any of these institutions that violate it.
Yeah, and you know what, Mike, we don't have time now, but hopefully we'll talk over the weekend show. It looks like Hamas told hostages who are now been freed that they're coordinating with college students in America. So think about that for a second. Always thought about, but now confirmed. Congressman Mike Lawler, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll talk about fentanyl next. Billy Baldwin, brand new documentary. Don't move.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We are losing so many people to fentanyl that it is the equivalent of a 747 going down every 2 days.
The 9,000 kilograms that were seized by the Hydra program last year is sufficient to kill the population of the United States several times over.
What do we want? Action! What do we want? Now!
Where is all of this stuff coming from? And all roads lead back to China.
How much of this deadly poison is coming across the border?
Because they're killing our children. How do we change that?
Yep, that is a little of the documentary that's now out and available for everybody, thanks to Billy Baldwin and Dr. Robert Marbut. Dr. Marbut's a Trump guy, as he just told me. You were the Discovery Institute senior fellow and former White House policy advisor. And Billy Baldwin, we know, esteemed actor, producer, and writer. You'll see him do voiceover for this. It's called Fentanyl, Death Incorporated, and it is pretty powerful. Billy, first off, congratulations to both of you guys for doing this. What alerted you to this?
Well, I was invited to do a film on homelessness called No Address. In preparation for No Address, we went to 20 cities in 18 states, and we spun off a documentary on homelessness that led to my partnership with Dr. Robert Marbot here to do the other documentary on fentanyl, Fentanyl Death Incorporated. And it all, I think we have a fentanyl crisis. I think we have a homelessness crisis. I think we have a bigger mental health crisis, and all roads with all of these problems lead through the mental health crisis that we're experiencing in the country right now.
And what you're seeing now is the untreated mental illness is self-medicating with fentanyl. And 5-6 years ago, it was other drugs, but fentanyl now is the most dangerous drug ever.
Explain to how that happened. This to trace back the history with the Purdue Pharma situation.
Yeah. And so shortly after Purdue Pharma, about 10 years ago, when all the lawsuits happened and the docs stopped prescribing, you had millions of prescriptions out, you had hundreds of thousands of people addicted, and suddenly they went cold turkey. And the Mexican cartels with China, bringing in the precursors, just backfilled that. They already had a distribution network in America with the meth, so they just brought fentanyl right in and backplaced it. And then now it's illicit drugs on the street, and one grain of rice of fentanyl will kill 15 people.
So that is unbelievable. And the impact on our country, do you believe, Billy, from what your gut tells you, what your research shows, that China is behind it? They want it. They want a modern-day opium war against the U.S.?
Well, the British did that to China back in the 1830s or something.
Yes.
They did the same thing. That's how they wound up coming into control of Hong Kong for so many years.
They have the precursors.
Yeah, so they're sending it here. We have as big a problem on the northern border with the Canadian biker gangs and the super labs up there. They're distributing. The northern border is as porous, more porous than the southern border. So we have a problem with Canada right now. And, you know, what people need to know is that we are 4% of the world's population. We consume 38% of the world's fentanyl, and we have 65% of the global deaths from fentanyl. It's the number one cause of death between the ages of 18 and 45 of all Americans, more than heart disease, more than cancer right now is fentanyl deaths.
And I think the stat that really gets it, brings it home, more people have died of fentanyl in the last 5 years than the last 100 years of war for Americans. So World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Kosovo, Global War on Terror, Afghanistan,
Desert
Iraq,
Storm, Desert Shield, all
add them all up. There are more people have died in fentanyl in the last 4 to 5 years in the United States.
And a lot of people
Americans
think, well, you choose to do drugs, that's what happens. This is not the case. Well, a lot of people, for example, you see these stories of college students. Hey, I'm looking to stay up a little bit longer. I'll take an illegal drug like Ritalin to stay up, and it's got fentanyl specks in there, and you're dead.
The woman that founded YouTube, her son was a freshman at Berkeley. This isn't a poor issue. This isn't a minority. This is wealthy, affluent white people. They send their kids to Berkeley, to Stanford. They're at a frat party, a sorority party. Somebody hands them a pill. They'll wake up the next day.
And right now, the fastest growing death rate for children 0 to 4 is fentanyl. Think about that. They're not addicts. They're just getting poisoned with the fentanyl dust hanging around on a public space. Put a sandwich down, pick it up, and they're dead.
So let's talk about the Arkansas. A lot of people say, hey, this is how I'll address it. I'll give them the needles. I'll give them the drugs. And that's permissive is not the way. Here's what Arkansas did. Cut 38.
There isn't a school in this nation that hasn't been affected. In Arkansas, it is state law that every school have naloxone. In Arkansas, this isn't L.A. or San Francisco, but that is how pervasive fentanyl is becoming.
Is that the Narcan?
Well, Narcan is what saves your life when you stop breathing.
Yeah.
Fentanyl will make you stop breathing, and the Narcan is what will start it again. Will revive you again. But let me just clarify something. Two things that you're going to find very interesting, Brian. One is that to give in Sacramento and San Francisco and Seattle and Portland, they're not giving away the drugs. They are giving away the paraphernalia. That sounds like a Nancy Pelosi idea. That was actually law enforcement. They didn't want to spread out their resources to 20 different sites. And they said, if we control it with a nurse where people aren't overdosing, we can now have our resources in these two sites in the city rather than spreading it out across the city. Wound up being not a great idea. And we have to course correct as we're moving forward. Another thing is, you know, we did this film on homelessness, and it shows the path to homelessness, domestic abuse, PTSD veteran. A lot of people say not their fault, a child, not their fault, a victim of domestic violence, not their fault. What about the people that choose to be homeless that are choosing to do the drugs? 90% of the people that are on the street that are homeless that are doing drugs don't have health care. They can't see a psychologist or a psychiatrist. They can't get the medications that all of us can get for anxiety, depression, bipolar, schizophrenic, PTSD, and they're self-medicating with alcohol and fentanyl because they're mentally ill.
Right.
They're not people that are saying, I want to be homeless and I want to be strung out on drugs on the street. They're people that are mentally ill and they're not getting the help they need.
And to me, right now in the United States, we've been making it so easy to get high and so hard to get treatment, especially on the West Coast and a few other places. We need to make it easy to get treatment and hard to get high.
Right. And you got to stay in treatment for the right period of time. Usually you get in there, it's in and out in 10 days.
Yeah. No question.
10 days, 28 days won't work.
We have like an Odd Couple roadshow. We just spoke to the Washington Policy Center in Spokane, 800 conservatives. What's the cat that followed me, us again? Prager, Dennis Prager. That's how conservative it was. Okay, Dennis Prager followed us. And 800 people came up to us afterwards. We were there for 2 hours answering questions, and they were very enamored with the fact that we are together, we are partnering. The right is talking to the left. It's civil. It's respectful. You know, it's like the old days. Remember the old days when I worked on the Hill? It was like Tip O'Neill and Bob Dole. And Reagan was talking more to Tip O'Neill than he was talking to Bob Dole. That's when people were in Georgetown, in the cocktail parties, and people were talking to each other. Now Democrats and Republicans aren't talking. Some Republicans aren't talking to Republicans.
Right.
We got to do something about that.
Here's what Speaker Johnson said. They have the Halt Fentanyl Act. It empowers law enforcement to go after the producers. As you know, they're starting to crack down like crazy, and that's what they're bringing in these tariffs. Cut 39.
What we'll be doing this week is continuing our efforts to protect American communities by voting on the Halt Fentanyl Act, which will permanently schedule fentanyl and all fentanyl-related substances as Schedule I narcotics. Why is that important? Because it empowers law enforcement to seize those deadly drugs and go after their producers and distributors and stop the flow.
Billy, is that a step in the right direction?
Yeah, I think you have to criminalize this. It can't be a misdemeanor anymore. It has to be a felony, and the judges have to be in a position to say, I'm either going to put you away or you're going to go to rehab. That's your sentence. And when you go away, people are wondering. The interesting thing is you have the compassionate side who has made mistakes, low harm, no harm, housing first. Well, you can't take a homeless person off the street who's mentally ill and addicted to drugs. If you get them off the street, great. You put them into housing, great. But now they're a homeless person. They're a mentally ill person who's addicted to drugs who has housing. The problem isn't gone. So I like the idea of making it a felony where a judge in a courtroom could say, I'm going to give you a choice. You're either going to do time or you're going to go to rehab. And another part of the argument is the compassion side that has slung a bunch of stuff against the wall and spent a lot of money and it hasn't been effective enough is talking to others that are saying, like, wait a second, that sounds expensive. How are we going to pay for it? And I'm here, and we're trying to demonstrate in this documentary that you're paying more now to not do enough. And I'll tell you how. 9/11 call. I've been there 100 times. Okay, fire department, sheriff, police, paramedics, nonprofits cost the taxpayer. Emergency room, admitted to the hospital, go into the court system, you're incarcerated. Property values, quality of life, Small Business Administration, commerce, tourism, all of these things are being affected. I told you in Spokane and in Sacramento, these cities were being destroyed by fentanyl and homelessness.
So are you for what Trump is doing at the border, saying the tariffs are going up 25% until you control the northern border? A lot of pullback, people saying that's really only 1% is coming through the Canadian side. And then over the weekend, we find out that Mexico has arrested 900 cartel members. And we've got the southern border down to a trickle and another 1,000 members of military going down there.
Well, to me, we got to control what's coming out of China. We got to control what's coming across the border.
And they can do that in 2 seconds.
And I traveled there for the movie. In China, there is no drug use in China inside their internal population. So they know how to control it, but they're not controlling their outflow. And so we got to get the cartels under control in Mexico, and we got to get the biker gangs out of Canada under control. Those are the three you have to do. And if it takes tariffs, and Billy and I probably differ on this, but if it takes tariffs to get the attention, then we need it. Nobody wants a tariff war. Nobody wants that to go on. But if that's what it takes to finally get Mexico extraditing people, which they have in the last week, in the biggest arrest they've made, they're really suddenly, I mean, Mexico, Claudia's just the president of Mexico. She's just kicking it. She's really doing good. But the Canadian border and U.S. border is the longest linear land border in the world. So it's not just Blaine to Maine. It's all the Alaska-Canadian western frontier. And so it right. is really porous up north.
Billy, when you went to city in your documentary, what did you notice? How, from well, what you knew from what it is?
I went on part of the journey, and what I learned from that, the takeaway was we don't have a homelessness crisis as much as we have a mental health crisis. That's why and COVID and fentanyl have exacerbated that problem, and we're at a totally new level in terms of homelessness. I told you the numbers before, just in L.A., 54,000 to 76,000, and it's interesting because you have the compassionate side that sometimes errs on the side of overcompensating, and that was triggered by the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. When Reagan, there was 500,000 federal mental health beds in the country in the 1950s. There's 30,000 now, and most of those are occupied by guilty by insanity. They're criminals that are in those mental health right. beds. So there's literally like 5,000 beds when we used to have 500,000 beds.
So you have to put a massive push to get facilities back and experts on.
The good news is there is a lot of hope because there's amazing programs right now. In Fort Smith, Texas, his program, 2,500 people a night, Haven of Hope in San Antonio. In Austin, there's this incredible partnership between the Rescue Mission and Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, and they're doing 360 wraparound comprehensive care that includes health care, drug addiction treatment, job training, job placement, 70% success rate, getting people back on their feet, totally independent, on their own, off the services, 70%.
And compassion without accountability is enablement. Yeah. And you got to have the accountability with the compassion. That's how you're successful.
When we're doing the panels, one last thing. When we're doing the panels, it's interesting. He's critical of the right, and I'm critical of the left. It's not vice versa.
Right.
And I'm sitting there saying, I've done conservatorships over people before. And in a conservatorship, it says they have to be a threat to themselves or others or harm themselves or others. And I'm sitting there watching somebody who we just brought back to life with Narcan. They vomit and they turn around and tell the fire department to get lost. I'm saying don't leave that languishing in the courts with the judges and the lawyers for a year and a half. Let the fire department and the nonprofit and the police department and the paramedics who are on the front lines in the trenches every day make the call. We got to take this guy
and
for 5 or 10 days.
And they got to get a place to take him. And that's
key. Yeah, you put them in the hospital, and then they're making a decision to do right. I want help or do I not want help? They're not high on Narcan. And the reason they're saying no is not only because the high is so good, it's because the detox is so terrifying to them and so painful to them physically and emotionally. Right. They're like, I'd rather risk dying than detox.
And this is screening tonight, guys, at the Empire AMC?
At 6:30 tonight, and go to FDIMovie.com, FDIMovie.com, or you could go the long one, FentanylDeathIncorporated.com, and you can go on and pick up a ticket for tonight.
And you'll speak about it, too.
Yeah, right? We're going to do a panel afterwards with Fire It, and two of the people you just had in the setup piece, right. They're going to be there, too.
Dr. Robert Marbot, great, great, great things you're doing. Billy, same thing. Go check out their documentary, Fentanyl, Death Incorporated. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for having us.
All right.
Thank you.
Ryan Kilmeade Show, back in a moment.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Our next question is from Aaron Gregg with The Washington Post.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for doing this. So my question relates to Elon Musk has said that he made the offer to bring you guys back earlier and that it was denied. My first question is that true? And if so, what would that have looked like? Was he offering to make another flight, push seats on another flight? Could you give us some background there?
I can only say that Mr. Musk, what he says is absolutely factual. We have no information on that, though, whatsoever. What was offered, what was not offered, who it was offered to, how that process has went. That's information that we simply don't have. So I believe him. I don't know all those details, and I don't think any of us really can give you the answer that maybe that you would be hoping for.
So that was the voice of an astronaut, Barry Wilmore, who's still at the space station along with Sunita Williams. And they were taking Q&A, and that was supposed to be up there for a week, been up there for 9 months or 9 days, or up there for 9 months. Why is that? Well, Boeing got up there. They had some problems, and they said we could only bring our capsule back on our own without people because we're not convinced it's going to be safe. How embarrassing it is for Boeing. It was at a series of missteps. How bad it is for Barry and Sunita Williams. Now, Sunita is the one with the hair all wild. Now, they say it's great. I love being in space. People love it. Okay, fine. I doubt it. You don't want to be up there for 9 months. Didn't you have plans? Didn't you want to see the Super Bowl in person? So then it comes out that Elon Musk offered to fly them back. It got to them. They could have done it, but Joe Biden didn't want to give Elon Musk, now a supporter, then a supporter of Donald Trump, and still is today, a big victory, as if Boeing was sponsored by Joe Biden. It would have been a victory for SpaceX. So let's get this straight. You're upset with Donald Trump for not signing on to legislation on the border because you think that Donald Trump was not for that because it would hurt his chances of victory. That was an assumption never confirmed. But in the big picture, by the way, they wouldn't have gotten, they did not have the support of in the Senate, even if Trump was all for it. But now you have a situation where two people are stranded in space, all because Elon Musk is associated with Donald Trump. Quick note on Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden is suing a Trump staffer for what he says is hacking into a laptop that we all know was left at a repair shop that they denied, and 51 Intel agents said it was Russian disinformation. Lie, 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 lie. FBI held it. That's a lie. People are going to be fired. So Hunter Biden digs in. His dad's president, feeling good about himself. He decides he's going to sue the Trump staffer. Now he came out and asked a judge to drop the lawsuit, saying, I have no money to pay my lawyers. I lost my house in the fire. No one's paying for my paintings because, my words, they suck. And without getting influence with your dad, there's no push to buy him. And with that producer who is putting you up for free, allowing you to stay in his penthouse for free, paying for your lawyers for free, well, you lost your leverage. Your dad's not president. So now Hunter Biden says, I'm out of money. Drop the lawsuit. So let's get this straight. The lawsuit that was meant to inflict pain on somebody that reported the laptop stolen and brought some of the information out is not going to go forward, even though he had to go lawyer up in order to fight a lawsuit against him. I'm not wondering if the judge is going to stand up and go, no, sorry about that. You're going to have to go through with the lawsuit. The other problem is, got no standing. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Going on out number at the top of the hour on Fox News Channel. Don't forget One Nation Sunday at 10. Keep it here. Brian Kilmeade Show.
This week on the Brett Baer Podcast, my all-star panel weighs in on the top stories at home and abroad. Fox News senior White House correspondent Peter Doocy, host of The Guy Benson Show, Guy Benson, and Fox News political analyst Juan Williams.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.